Hey there, it's Rich. If your childhood was anything like mine, you most likely were warned about a variety of cons. Remember Stranger Danger? I was especially trained to be on the lookout for an adult who might pretend to be a close friend or relative of the family. The idea was that someone posing as an uncle or maybe a very good friend of my dad could show up after school was over for the day and attempt to take me home. So the concept of an imposter was ingrained in me at a very young age. Furthermore, my dad was, by nature, a very skeptical man. He was a cryptologist in the Air Force and held a top secret security clearance. He always reminded me of the one mantra the Air Force used to beat into his head during his time in cryptology school. Believe nothing of what you hear, little of what you read, and only about half of what you see. This healthy dose of skepticism my dad passed on to me has served me very well over the years. However, with recent innovations in artificial intelligence, I'm not so sure you can even believe half of what you see anymore, especially when it's digital. The rapid rise of deepfake technology is stirring up a hornet's nest. Do a quick online search of the term deepfake, and you will come across a mountain of news stories where this technology has been used in absolutely outrageous ways. Read a few of those stories, and you might walk away feeling like we're doomed. Deepfakes are no joke. They are altering the way businesses operate and forcing individuals to think long and hard about what type of personal information they're sharing on social media. In this episode, we sit down in studio with Anonymy Labs CFO, Naomi Ruhl. Naomi gives us some insight into how deepfakes and AI are forcing corporate finance and accounting departments to adapt to this brave new world. While at the moment, it might look like the Wild West out there, I still came away from this interview feeling like everything will be just fine. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating identity protection solutions into their software. And have you heard about the MySudo web browser extension? Breaking your online data trail just got way easier. To learn more, visit mysudo.com. That's mysudo.com. Naomi, welcome to Privacy Files.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, boy, deepfakes is going to be a fun story. So, first of all, you're the CFO here at Anonymy Labs, and with the accent?
From Australia.
From Australia. And I'd love to think that you flew all the way here just for this.
I did, of course.
Okay. So, jumping into this episode. So, there, obviously, one of the themes of the podcast is there's so many scams out there, and we've heard a lot lately about this conversation around AI, and I think it really took off a little over, I guess, a year ago when the release of ChatGPT was being talked about. Everybody internally, there was several people that got excited about it. And of course, it's going to bring a lot of positivity, I guess, to the economy. But of course, with any new technology, there's going to be your bad actors who are going to use it for harm. So what inspired this episode is the story about the CFO who was not the CFO, right? So this came out of the CFO.com article. It was originally reported on CNN, and it's entitled Finance Employee Defrauded $25 Million Deepfake CFO. So let's go over it, and you can just jump in whenever you want, Naomi. We'll just talk from here. So apparently there's a Hong Kong-based finance employee. It was, to my knowledge, has never been named or even the multinational firm that he worked with. And he joined this video call, and there were several coworkers on this call, including the CFO. Only one problem is the only real person on the call was this finance employee. So according to investigators, deepfake technology was used to turn publicly available video into believable representations of the victim's colleagues. So the fake CFO instructed the finance employee to remit a total of $25.6 million, roughly U.S. dollars, to multiple bank accounts over the course of 15 separate transactions.
Yikes.
Where do we start?
I know. Well, I think the only reason this has hit the media is because it's such a large sum of money and they've go big or go home. has really come into play here. 15 transactions, they must be sizable transactions themselves as well.
What would convince somebody to do that? Like, it seems so out of the norm too, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and then it brings to mind what governance and what compliance aspects have been missing from that particular finance team where they could transact in such large quantities through video calls. Generally, there's a series of written documentation and asks that come through as well. But I think the article did point to the fact that there were emails that came through and the employee initially thought, hey, these look suspicious, and didn't act upon the emails, but then was convinced separately or in addition to when the video call occurred as well. So there was initial emails and they went, this doesn't look right. And then it moved and escalated to a series of video calls. And that's when the person went, okay, well, my initial suspicions have been overridden and therefore this transaction or these transactions are real.
I'm just thinking now, because I don't have all the details to the story, maybe we never will, but everybody has, a signing authority level, right?
Correct.
And so it's probably one of the reasons why they broke it into 15 transactions, I would imagine. But that still seems like a significant, I have no idea what level this finance employee was, but wow.
Or if those 15 transactions all went to the same bank account, I mean, that would generally raise red flags. Or if they're 15 separate accounts, or how much each of those transactions are. So there's a lot of unknowns about this particular case. But what is concerning is that the deep fake and that the AIs, or, you know, in combination, are so real these days that it can emulate employees or executives, not only in how they look, but how they sound and the mannerisms. So the actual training of these deep fakes is at a level where none of us can actually pick them apart and say that's not real. So that's the biggest concern.
Obviously, it's still early, but what do you think the answer is to this? Is it just more training?
How do you train when something looks legitimate? I don't think that's actually going to help. I think it's going to be a series of internal processes that need to be created from a finance team perspective. So there will need to be probably 3 or 4 elements of validation before money leaves the bank account. The internal controls around who is able to release cash from the bank accounts when it hits certain thresholds needs to be tied in. And then there tend to be basic controls in organizations anyway when it comes to being a CFO and looking after the financials. So I think there's going to be a lot of regulation and regulatory changes, or even the auditors potentially will be looking for a lot more control to be brought into the finance team to manage the cash outflows now of an organization.
And I imagine just by the nature of your profession being in corporate finance and accounting, you're probably generally more of a cautious, maybe even skeptical individual. You have to be.
Yes.
In a way, because you're protecting all of this money and it makes you that way.
Well, yeah, it just goes with the territory. But the rise of phishing emails, and every day any finance team on the planet will receive an email from Rich saying, hey, I've changed my bank account details. I know payroll's being run this week. Could you just quickly get this through because I need to pay my rent and expenses? And then when you look at the actual email, it's a Gmail account, richisgreat@gmail.com, and straight away in your mind you get, this is not real. However, when a finance team is under pressure, and this is the complexity of the finance profession, is that they tend to be, well, a lot of CFOs will attest to the fact that finance teams tend to be quite under-resourced, and they have a lot of pressure and a lot of things to do very quickly at the highest degree of accuracy. And then when you get all of these emails, you might not catch every single one of them, and there'll be that one that gets through because of speed of accuracy and workload and all of those things. And it's just that one that might sneak through that could make or break the bank and organizations. Or the phishing scams on the rise, and they're becoming a lot harder to detect. So now they're using not only the employees, but they're also mimicking vendors and quite well-known vendors or suppliers. They're copying logos, the words that are on the invoices. So it's easy to get hold of, say, an electricity bill, copy all of the data that's on it and all the imagery, change the bank account details, and then create a fictitious email to say, hey, we've changed all of our bank account details. Please pay this invoice promptly. So, I mean, there's an element of training that needs to occur, but then there's also a secondary element of validation. So you should train your team to pick up the phone and not call the number that's on the brand new invoice, of course, but go back and call the contact center or someone else or the account manager for that particular invoice or supplier and start a revalidation and verification process yourself. So where we can use automation to get more efficient at things and process large volumes of data very quickly, we now need to go back to first base principles and use a lot of manual steps and processes and phone calls to go back and revalidate what we're seeing come through the automated processes is accurate. So as more efficient AI is becoming and more that we can generate a lot of process efficiencies, there's an also equal amount of processes that need to be put in place manually to compensate for inherent weaknesses in what we're seeing.
In larger organizations, do you almost have to factor in that there's going to be some element? Obviously, mistakes do happen and you try to correct those in auditing, but are there some cases where you're just like, oh, it's so small, I can't figure it out. We're going to build that into our forecast. Does that happen in large organizations? Is it worth, maybe sometimes it's like you said, they're understaffed and it's like, oh, we really don't have the time to waste to go after what is a fraction of a percent or something. And maybe that's why the fraudsters focus on that level of fraud.
You would hope not. Yeah. Certainly I haven't.
Not $1 gets through.
No, not $1. Look, I haven't heard of that actually being factored into any forecasts. And I would hope that's not the case. But, you know, who knows what the future holds. There may be a level of tolerance put into these types of things.
Because I know, like, retail will factor in shrink or something.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Theft or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think banking industry as well, when they can't recover payments and so on and so forth. They do, but from a financial accounting perspective, with most businesses, you wouldn't bake into your forecast fraudulent activities and the finance team being...
That might not be received well.
No.
Here was an interesting one too. So TrustPair released a report recently and it said, this one was really surprising to me, 83% of finance leaders dealt with cyber fraud in 2023. Wire transfer fraud, vendor fraud, and CEO or CFO impersonations were the most frequent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 83% is quite high, I would say. And, I mean, I didn't quantify the actual number of or the value of what's escaping organizations. However, you know, the phishing emails that come through, the invoice replacements, they're very commonplace and that's where you can get tripped up very quickly and unfortunately quite easily.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Ugh, not again. I can't find it anywhere.
What's got you so frustrated?
Hi, Bob. Just trying to find an important email, but my inbox is a disaster. It's all ads and spam. It's exhausting.
Sounds like you need somewhat of an inbox intervention. Have you heard of MySudo?
MySudo? No, what's that?
It's an awesome app where you can create a pseudo. It's kind of like a digital alias. Each of these pseudos comes with its own email to help you organize your digital life. It's the perfect tool to keep your personal and work emails spam-free.
So what you're saying is I can use one of these pseudo emails and never have to worry about spamming up my personal or work email?
Yep. Plus, it's super secure. You should download it.
Downloading as we speak. You are a lifesaver.
Don't let spam emails take over your life. Reclaim your inbox with MySudo. Download MySudo today and start your journey to a clutter-free digital world. Visit MySudo.com and remember, stay private.
I think I told you a story last week. We were just talking about doing this episode that I worked in a company before where I was asked by the CEO, and I never did this, but I couldn't believe I was being asked it. He said, oh, it's very common in our industry just to create fake invoices and just send them out. And, you know, if 2-3% of accounting departments just pay, then, hey, it's new money. Have you seen that? Have you come across that?
No.
No. Okay. Well, he was definitely shady.
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge with a lot of what finance teams are seeing is working out what invoices are real versus what invoices are not real. And the more that the finance team is business partner to the rest of the organization and works very closely with each of the departments, we're mindful that if a finance team is a siloed function and not working with the rest of the organization, things can get through a lot easier. But when they are working very closely, say with the marketing team, and the marketing team says, hey, no, that's actually not a real invoice, don't pay it, that's where you can get a lot better at identifying these types of invoices that, you know, just been slipped through that aren't real and should not be paid.
Is that why I guess it's so important to have an actual signed contract too that you can match your invoices with? And if something is off, then it's like, okay, well, why?
Yeah, contracts, purchase orders are another great one as well. In my time, I have seen fictitious POs coming through with different numbering on them. And, you know, as a finance function, you get to know what your numbering convention is and you can go, hey, this is not real. But organizations do try, and there are companies out there that have been stood up just to create these fictitious invoices to try and see what they can get away with. Unfortunately, they get away with more than what you would think they were able to, which is unfortunate.
It also talks about the methods used to achieve these frauds. It says methods used by fraudsters according to those who were impacted were text messages, 50%, fake websites, 48%, and phone calls, 39%. So a lot of social engineering, I guess, pretending to be somebody you're not, and maybe taking advantage of more of a less experienced employee, possibly.
Yeah, and it's that sense of urgency as well. When finance teams are in month-end process, the whole planet knows when month-end is for a finance team. You don't have to try and guess or get creative about when that is. That's when you slip things through. And I've sat there, you know, with my team in particular in different organizations, and some of my team have received text messages from me, hey, such and such, can you make this transfer really quickly? I'm in a very urgent meeting. I can't step out, but I'll call you later. And they've received the text message, looked at me sitting across from them and gone, I don't think this is accurate or correct, Naomi, unless you've managed to pick up your phone and text me without me seeing it. So it actually happens, I'd say, too much.
Wow. I guess it makes hiring a little bit more, you can't afford to be wrong when you're hiring too. It's not just your background. It's also kind of trust the person. You're looking for other things that maybe most wouldn't when they're hiring.
Yeah, there's individual trust, and then there's the, are they going to be also a gatekeeper themselves and look at something, an email, a text message, a phone call, and think, is this legitimate or do I need to go and ask more questions? And generally, you should encourage your teams and create a space where they can go and ask one question down or two questions down, and make sure that the company cash and assets is safe and they're being very pragmatic about their job as well. So, yeah, skills are great to look for. The aptitude is where you need to focus. But then questioning everything, and when something doesn't feel right, you know, the ability to take the next steps and ask what would be perceived as a silly question, but it's actually not in this context.
Yeah, very proactive, attention to detail. Almost treating the money like it's your own,
exactly.
Essentially. Yeah. So this article also mentions that this trend has forced CFOs to allocate more towards cybersecurity amid rising technology dependence. Because cybercrime targets companies' financials, the finance chief has become one of the primary defenders against bad actors. So congratulations.
Thank you. Finance is an interesting space because it's highly regulated as well. And the regulations keep changing and evolving, mainly, you know, on the recording and reporting of financial accuracy. But there's a lot of a lot coming in on the cybersecurity space now as well. So the finance function has been on a constant evolutionary path, you know, probably for the last 20 years, and the role of the CFO in that has changed as well. So where it was been traditionally recording and reporting and just the scorekeeper and, you know, talking about the past, the CFO and the finance team is becoming a lot more proactive, and the regulations have been changing year after year to keep up with the pace of change and the pace of technology adoption. And now we're in a space where the finance function is evolving again to be the gatekeeper and the scorekeeper, look at the future, but then also make sure that cybercrime isn't happening.
Sure. Playing a big part, I guess, in cybersecurity procurement, maybe tools, and even the governance side of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they say that payment fraud has seen a huge spike. In 2023, of the companies that were targeted, 96% said it was in some form of payment fraud. And that 96% is a stark jump from 2022, when just over half, about 56% of respondents, said they had been targeted, representing a 71% year-over-year increase. Yikes. Payment fraud. Gosh. They also went on to say that of those targeted for payment fraud, 36% of organizations lost more than $1 million. Wow.
That's a lot of money to lose. Particularly, they'll be going after not the big end of town. They'll be targeting, you know, small, medium enterprises. And then there's millions of them, hundreds of millions of them globally. So if you can, you know, take $10,000 out of a handful of those organizations every couple of months, that adds up to a lot of money very quickly, unfortunately.
So is it maybe, to your point too, just understaffed? Some of that could contribute?
Yeah, and I mean, generally when they hit the finance teams, the bad actors hit the finance teams, is when they're under a lot of pressure. And it'll be month end, year end, and then, you know, that one email or one WhatsApp message or one text message that just gets through, that's when disaster strikes. And it's not until they go back and a vendor might say, oh, you haven't paid me yet. And then you pull out the invoices and say, no, but you changed your bank account details. And then they'll say, no, we didn't. Then you end up in the situation where you go, we need to look at what's occurred here and try and fill in the gaps.
So also it says, according to Trustpilot, 49% of CFOs have increased fraud prevention budgets in the past year. However, according to Trustpilot's CEO, he adds, training around fraud risks and processes is what CFOs think is the most beneficial method to reduce the impacts of fraud, but 52% of CFOs believe employees don't always follow the fraud prevention policies in place. Humans continue to make mistakes in the fraud prevention process, and training alone is not enough to keep up with sophisticated fraud attacks.
I mean, that's incredibly accurate and a concern.
I mean, the fraud, sadly, it can be internal too. I mean, you have internal, you have external, so you're always having to think about both sides of it.
That's the checks and balances there. So when you're dealing with cash and money, and particularly in the context that we're seeing globally now, there's always a need for two people looking at one item, because it's always harder. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it's harder to take money out of an organization when we need to involve another person. So you should always have really good segregation of duties. So one person isn't managing the cash end-to-end in an organization, and there's levels of checks and balances that you do bake into your controls and processes to make sure that there's two or three people involved. And then before cash leaves the bank account, it should always be two individuals that are signing off on the money leaving the bank account at least. And then for wire transfers, potentially another as well.
Yeah, there was another story I told you about too, and you're like, wow, what kind of a past did I have? But in the same company there was that I had worked in, it was right at the end when I was actually, I think I'd already submitted my notice to leave, and so I was on a video call. Actually, I think it was just, I was just on the conference call. It wasn't even video. And I remember I was just came out from the dentist, and so I'm listening to it in the car, and the announcement had been made that there was missing funds. And it was correlated with previously, just about a week ago, our head of finance basically disappeared. Everything went on lockdown. And they found that over the course of 5 years, he had been skimming about $200,000 off the top every year. Like, how does that happen? I mean, it wasn't a huge organization. And this is one of those companies that paid bonuses pretty much to everybody. And it was based on some calculation. And so, you know, over the course of 5 years, he essentially stole a ton of money from people's paychecks. Mm-hmm. Still to this day, I can't believe, how does that happen unless somebody else was involved too? But maybe it's just oversight. Maybe people just like, yeah, well, you know, everything's good. I trust this person. So
there's trust, and then you need to verify. And that just goes, you know, with the territory. But you always, unfortunately, hear cases like this in the media, and they bubble up every year or every couple of years. And it occurs over a long period of time. And generally what happens is there's a mistake that's made once, and then the money's paid back. And then there's a mistake that's made a second time, and then the money's paid back. And then there'll be some sort of a life situation or challenge that arises in the personal life, and then it will turn into a transaction here. And
it's like an experiment.
I'll pay it back. And generally when you look at how these things evolve over time, that tends to be the fact pattern that sits there. It's not that people deliberately go out of their way to do something nefarious in most cases.
Sure.
It's an accident. It's happened twice. And then all of a sudden there's a situation that needs a bit of assistance. So that tends to happen. And then the next step is it becomes a habitual activity, unfortunately. And then over time, when people are looking at the financials, it sits in line with the month-on-month trend or the annual trend that there's a certain level of expenditure in this particular area. So it does get missed.
Crazy. So the article continues on. It says that over two-thirds of finance leaders say they expect fraud to increase. However, fewer responding in kind, as only 28% say they have fraud prevention software to protect from these attacks. So when they say fraud prevention software, it's just kind of like sometimes I'll get suspicious activity on my credit card, or it appears to be suspicious activity. It was just me. Maybe I took a trip to Europe and they're like, it's kind of not normal for Rich. So then I get the fraud alert. I'm sure there's some kind of AI thing going on there that just says, ooh, this is a little bit out of the norm for Rich.
Yeah, yeah. There's elements like that that the banks are putting in place to assist individuals and organizations. There's all types of phishing software and scam emails that you can put in place, and you know, most companies have. But when it comes to the invoice fraud, that one's a lot more challenging to detect. And I think there are third-party providers that can step in and offer services to make sure that the invoices are legitimate. However, as the industry, the bad guy industry, is evolving, the good guys are having a really hard time in keeping up. So we're placing a lot more reliance on the individuals and the human intervention to really check and validate and verify everything that they're touching.
Mm. About 56% of respondents say their companies have increased budgets around cybersecurity technology in the last 6 to 12 months. In addition to software spend, finance teams have turned to workflow changes, double checking, that's 56%, dual approval processes, as you mentioned, 47%, and segregation of duties, 40%.
Yes, yeah. That's the only way to really get around these mitigating, well, they're the only mitigating factors to put in to make sure that the company is safe and secure.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process, fraud is a constant worry, and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo Platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
How about some positive talk? What about good uses of AI? Are there any?
There are. And the role of the finance team has been evolving, like I said, for the last 20 years. We've been, I think, at the forefront of a lot of technology adoption over time. So there are OCR tools that came about probably 10, 15 years ago that would scan invoices and pop them into your ERP system. So we've seen a lot of growth and transformation over many, many years, and we're still seeing it today. So that's where AI has had a role in the finance function, and we're, you know, continuing to adopt those and move forward. But as we think about AI and the path forward, there's three main areas where AI can assist. One is aggregating and centralizing varied types of data, so scanning through contracts and emails and taking disparate information and bringing it together to help the finance team assess and analyze things a lot faster. The other area, which has been in place for a very long time, is automating repetitive tasks, the highest degree of accuracy, because humans make mistakes and we might key something incorrectly. So AI has been used for a very long period of time and will continue to do so and, you know, take some human out of the process. And the third area is gathering, analyzing, and interpreting financial data in real time. So that's where you can review financial statements and assess them against other companies, if they're publicly available, of course, and then pull together some real-time analytics. Now, that's all dependent on the company's appetite to adopt AI technologies and place its information in ChatGPT type areas. And every organization that wants to protect its data and financially sensitive information would say, please don't do this. So there's going to be a bit of an adoption over time. And depending on whether the organization is using in-house machine learning or publicly available, and what their rules or what the governance structure is around the adoption of AI technologies. But by and large, the finance function has been evolving over time and will continue to do so and look for the right place to leverage technologies to keep the finance function at the forefront of faster business decisions, more strategic thinking, and then working with organizations on operational performance.
Yeah, it says in a recent Workday survey of 1,000 business decision makers from around the globe that 73% said they are feeling pressure to implement AI in their organizations as leadership seeks to increase productivity and gross domestic product. So that's, I think, gives you kind of an idea of what's going on. And obviously, there's always different opinions about the macro environment in terms of the economy. But a lot of people are now saying that many of these layoffs that you've been hearing about over the past year in technology are really actually part of this AI revolution going on. And so it's not really, oh, the economy is about ready to drop off a cliff. It's just they're using AI and it's changed.
It is. And it will continue to change in the future. And there'll be a happy medium. And at the moment, I think what's occurring is a lot of organizations are saying, hey, let's test this technology and see what we can get to. And some of the consequences aren't really known at this stage. And that will continue to be washed out. And there'll be some, you know, looking in the rearview mirror and deciding, hey, that was actually not a great idea to put their company's financial information out there and having AI assess it and benchmark it, or removing some humans from the process and then going down a fully autonomous path because, you know, like we discussed earlier, invoice fraud and areas that the AI tools can scan and process information really quickly. It won't pick up on the more discrete pieces of data that a human may pick up. So it's an interesting journey, I think, that we're all on at this point in time, and there'll be a lot of lessons learned, and some of them might, unfortunately, be very hard lessons that are learned.
The ending has not been written yet.
That's right.
Also related to this, there was another CFO.com article titled The Hidden Hazard, How Fraud is Impacting Fleet's Bottom Line. And yeah, I mean, it's mostly just talking about the logistics industry and companies with large vehicle fleets. But when they were doing this survey, one of the things that caught my attention is they found that 44% of leaders know fraud is impacting their business, but they're just not sure how to find it. That's frightening.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I wonder where that is in the process. Is it in the delivery? Is it driving trucks around in fleets? Exactly. Yeah, where?
Well, some of this they talked about, unfortunately, this is the internal angle, but expense reporting, of course, is a big one. And I know it sounds like, you know, where did you work, Rich? But I don't think this is unique to me. Every job I've been in the past, not this one, just a big disclaimer, but I've known people anywhere from frontline workers all the way up to mid-level and senior-level executives where indirectly I've heard rumors and stories about just incredible expense reporting abuse. And I'm just like, how is that? And I could tell that there were other people in supervisor capacity who was allowing it to happen. And I'm like, that's just scary. And everybody was talking. It was like, in many cases, these were open secrets. And it's just like, yeah, that's just the culture here.
And that brings up a really interesting topic and point. So when it comes to financial governance, there's also an element of culture as well that comes into mix. And if you look at the responsibilities of directors in particular, they have hard skills and hard regulations to make sure they're abide by, but then there's also bringing in the softer areas, which are culture of the organization.
Sure.
But how do you define what's a good company culture and what a bad is, and how do you make sure that you get the right team mix to have a, you know, very successful company culture and productive, but at the same time not pushing the envelope a bit too far and potentially putting in excessive expense claims.
Yeah, so the one other thing you touched on a little bit too is just knowing, I guess, up front, and maybe you still never know, but when you're putting data into these machine learning models, is that publicly available data? Is it internal? And you would hope that that's pretty clear up front, but gosh, you see all these stories about big tech sharing your data even though you thought they weren't. It's a risk.
It's a big risk. And I would discourage anyone from sharing anything with an AI tool or language model that's not publicly available.
What about like business communications and finance and accounting? I mean, could you use AI for that? Just to write a report, or is that still a little iffy?
It's still a little iffy at this point in time. I mean, you can use AI or at least leverage it to draft some communications, but then as long as it's fairly generic. So accounting standards, they're fairly generic and they're all published on the standard setting bodies pages. So for a finance team could actually leverage some of writing of the initial notes to the financial statements, but then you need to add in your own organizational context to it. So it can speed up that process, but it won't complete it for you without actually putting all of your company data into the model itself, which is a big no-no, of course.
If you were absolutely certain that this machine learning model was just only internal data, can you see a future where maybe financial analysis and forecasting and modeling would be a use for finance and accounting?
I think it's going to take a number of years to get to that point, to be honest, because, and even humans need to learn what the organization is, the context, and all of the drivers of the organization before actually turning in a model. And that learning process takes a very long time. Now, that's not to say it won't happen, but at this stage, you would need to feed an AI tool a lot of information to be able to start to pull those sets of analysis together.
That's a good point. So it's like, I guess the takeaway is it's not just about spreadsheets. There's a story going on too.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, as we get closer to wrapping up, I mean, how about the fun part of this is, how has this experience in your career made you more protective of your own personal data and privacy? Has it changed the way you are?
Working in Anonymy Labs? Or
In Anonymy or in just being in finance and accounting in general, have you become much more, I guess, cognizant about how you share your information personally?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's so easy to have a mistake. And it's, you know, when you're under high pressure or, you know, maybe you're walking into a movie theater and you're about to see a movie and you get a text and you look at it and go, oh, okay, I need to action this. Someone in my family needs help. And then you have to steel yourself for that moment and step back and ask the question, is this real? And I think without the finance background and the training to, you know, that professional skepticism, you could do things very quickly and respond to an urgent need when it's actually not the right way to respond to that particular situation. So finance and accounting actually provides a good discipline to take a breath, ask more questions, and then act, because we're just humans at the beginning and the end of the day, and we will respond to urgent needs and sometimes to our own detriment, unfortunately.
I like that term, professional skepticism. Oh, this has been great. Yeah, I was thinking too, I don't know why I had this flashback. I wonder if I would have liked finance more if I had a better professor in college. It was awful.
It does help. It does help. That's for sure.
Oh, it was terrible. Anything else you wanted to talk about or cover before we end?
No, I think we've covered a fair amount today. So thank you, Rich, for inviting me onto the podcast.
Yeah, this has been great. This is a topic we haven't touched yet, and it sounds like this isn't going away.
It's definitely not. I think we'll see a lot more in this space in the coming months and years, and it won't be happy stories, unfortunately, as the profession and all of the individuals in it work out how things are changing and what to look for. And there'll just be lessons that are learnt.
I guess the takeaway is stay vigilant.
Exactly, yeah. And always, you know, feel free to ask a couple more questions before you press the go button on processing cash out of the bank or processing an invoice. And that's just healthy, I think.
Yeah, it's never really as urgent as they say it is.
No, that's right.
Awesome. Thanks, Naomi.
All right. Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files. If you would like to be on the show or you know someone who would be a good fit, head on over to privacyfiles.com and submit a guest request. Also, if you're enjoying the content we're cranking out, please consider giving us a 5-star rating in your favorite podcast player. It just takes a few seconds, and it helps us with our privacy mission. In our next episode, we'll be talking to Richard Hollis, who's based in London, England. Richard has spent decades in the information security profession and brings the kind of refreshing take on cybersecurity that I think you will like. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.